Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford, and this week I am delighted to be joined by former Manon footballer Dick Clarkin and member of the GAA COVID Advisory Committee, Kieran Whelan, former Dublin footballer and Sunday Game analyst, and Rory O'Neill, former footballer of some fashion and Sunday Game series producer. How are we all doing, lads?
Good, Mikey. Good. Very good.
Not a problem.
And we all survived the storm. That's good. Nobody's house is upside down. It's been a stormy week all round, though, really, to use a very lame segue. On Tuesday, the Cabinet met and decided upon a raft of new restrictions in light of rising number of COVID-19 cases in recent weeks. One of the measures was an immediate ban on spectators at all sporting events. Up until now, 200 people were allowed to be part of an outdoor sporting event, which meant that in the likes of GAA and soccer, somewhere between 15 and 120 fans could attend matches after players and coaches and etc. were taken into account. A planned move to permit 500 people at events last month was delayed when cases of COVID-19 increased. This decision, well, blow to county boards and a small number of club supporters, cast a major shadow of a doubt over the inter-county season, which is due to recommence on the 17th of October. In the hours after the announcement, the GAA released the following statement. Following this evening's unexpected announcement, the GAA invites Dr. Ronan Glynn and Neffet to present the empirical evidence which informed a requirement for the association to curtail its activities. The association will tonight be issuing an invitation to Dr. Glynn to meet with its COVID advisory group in this regard without delay. The GAA and its members remain at all times committed to protecting public health. This statement met with a, shall we say, a mixed response, but when staunch anti-establishment firebrand Gerlach Land writes this in the Daily Star, whoever came up with that GAA statement should have done two laps of an empty stadium before rewriting the whole thing. Do they not realise how lucky we are in the GAA to have any games at all, especially without testing the players? So maybe you've struck a bum note. So that's where we're at. I'll come to yourself, Dick. I think it's fair to say that anybody involved in the GAA administration was taken somewhat by surprise by Tuesday's announcement.
Yeah, Mickey, I suppose that a lot of people probably don't appreciate that has been sort of the case from the start of it, that we've always had to react to news or updated guidelines, and wouldn't you might think that you might have got some sort of insight or heads up of what was coming on a Friday, even if you remember it used to be typically the briefing from Neffet and Leo, and then, you know, but it's not the first time basically that we've been blindsided about news and had to sort of react and pivot fairly quickly. So we've sort of become used to it. It has been quite challenging, obviously, because you have to try and make big decisions, try and scramble updated protocols on a broad basis from spectators, players across all grades and all the logistics around it, and hope that you haven't missed anything, because especially now it was extremely more challenging because games were happening, games were scheduled, crew camps were up and running, so all this stuff was live, and there was obvious absolute confusion as to what that actually meant for clubs and counties that are running these events. So, you know, we had to do as we had to do from the start. We met last night to try and put a bit of a sense and shape around, well, how can we, within the confines of the guidelines, keep the show moving safely and as much as possible within the spectrum of the guidelines, which is obviously even more challenging considering what they are this time around.
Mm. Have you had a response from Neffet or Ronan Glynn to your...
Not yet. So that invitation has been sent out, and you know, the GAA have been very clear on that. And yeah, there's a bit of kickback, I think, in some quarters in terms of the tone around that. But listen, at the end of the day, you know, is there another organisation that has had a positive contribution, not just from getting people back, playing games safely and all of the benefits from that, but like, you have to remember, like, there's club grounds across country, modern training centres have put themselves forward for testing centres. Like, if you can show me another organisation that has done more to try and support communities and support the state to deal with this. I'd love to see it. You know, people sort of saying, well, why should the GAA be exception to this? Well, they are an exception. You know, and there's enough there to justify that. And I think it was reasonable in light of what's going on at the minute to try and get some sort of clarity, because it has such a massive impact. And it's not a Croke Park thing. It's your grassroots, it's parents, it's kids and all the rest. It's your society is having the impact for. And you know, the members, the public want clarity as much as anyone from Croke Park. So I think it was reasonable in that sense. So the invitation's out there. Whether we'll get anything remains to be seen, but hopefully you might see something.
Yeah. On the issue of clarity, Ciarán, we had the GAA issued advice to their members yesterday, and they were advising or kind of requesting that one parent be allowed to attend an underage match for the welfare of the child, which is, I believe, in, you know, within TUSLA guidelines, it's not an unreasonable thing, you would imagine. Nobody wants to drop a 7 or 8 year old off, you know, and leave them somewhere for 2 hours with people they might not know very well and then come back. You know, I don't think that's unreasonable, but I think last night, Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, said, you shouldn't be going to watch your children play a match. So there's confusion and there's a gap between what people expect and what people are being told they can do. And I think in a vacuum or in a confusion, you're probably not going to get great adherence to guidelines and regulations.
Yeah, there is that lack of clarity and contradiction, I think, is leading to probably a lot of frustration and anger, Mikey, to be honest with you. And like the minister's comments last night, even to say that sport was an inherent risk and schools was a controlled environment. You know, the school environment are putting a lot of work, the principals around the country are putting a lot of effort into getting schools ready. But with all due respect, you know, the GAA and all other NGBs have invested a hell of a lot of time in creating a safe environment. And credit to Dick and the committee in there, because we've all been involved where we've had the COVID officers. We've all been cleaning balls, cleaning cones over the last few weeks. We've been a check-in before every training session with a health questionnaire. And I think to say that sport wasn't a controlled environment, I think, is nonsense, being honest with you. So I think that's the disappointing view, that probably the efforts that have gone in by all the NGBs and the GAA in particular over the last few months to create that safe environment has, you know, it was a bit of a kick in the teeth, I suppose, this week for the changes to come out. But it's that lack of clarity. And you know, obviously, we do have a problem, and we have to respect that numbers are on the increase. We're up to third into Europe. We did expect there was going to be, I suppose, a series of measures introduced. But you would have thought, obviously, the government take on NPHET's advice, and we saw they made tweaks and changes to it. And maybe a period of, you know, 24 hours and an engagement with Sport Ireland and the NGBs to say, right, okay, listen, we do have evidence, or we have problems, and we can point to evidence whether that's carpooling, whether it is the social interactions before or after games, whether that's in pubs or restaurants. There's still all that lack of clarity around where these cases are arising that are connected to sports. And I thought it may be a simple engagement to say, you know, with the national government bodies, we do have a problem. It is on the increase. We do have some evidence here. Now, can you look at your procedures and maybe tighten up on them? And I think all organisations would have taken a reasonable approach to that. And I think the GAA probably would have come back and maybe said, yes, we respect that. But can we put a protocol in place where, you know, one parent can attend matches for the health and safety of the children? Can we have a small crowd in large intercounty venues for matches for championship semi-finals? We'll take it on board. We'll look at our restrictions. Give us 24 hours, and we'll communicate that out to the club. And if that meant your COVID advisors, you know, having to monitor parents coming wearing the face masks, you know, maybe there was a little bit of complacency creeped in over the last few weeks. And if we just had to enhance those procedures, I think everybody would have bought into that. Now we're left in a vacuum where will kids fix go ahead? You know, like, say, for example, the Dublin County Board issued a directive for fixtures that are on tonight and basically instructed parents to drop their kids off and disappear for 90 minutes. You know, that's all they could do in this, because there is...
And we know, at the end of that statement, because I read it, because obviously I got it as well, He had three exclamation marks at the end of it, you know.
And that's the lack of clarity, and that's the confusion that's out there. And I think that could have been, like, the communication process, as Dick alludes, it could have been handled better. And you know, I thought last night's comments by the minister, as I said, it was kind of probably a little bit disrespectful to sports and sports organisations and the work and effort that they put in to try and create a controlled environment, because I've seen it across other NGBs, working with them on a professional basis, on a day-to-day basis. Huge work has gone in to try and get sport back in our lives. But we do have to respect the increase in numbers and that there is a problem and it is back out in the community. But I just think the whole process has been handled really poorly, and everybody was willing. The motto was, we're all in this together. We were all in this together, but communication and working together is the key thing, in my view.
Yeah, Rory, our friend Jerry Killeen, the epidemiologist, is quoted in the Examiner today, and we know Jerry, he's very much of the opinion we shouldn't be doing anything. There should be no sport going on, watching or playing, and we should get rid of this virus, full stop. But he agrees that, he says, this is just confusion, and either it makes sense and it is safe to go back playing and watching, or it doesn't. So the government is showing concern.
One thing, Mike, I'd like, it's just, I maybe ask Dick the question. Dick, do you envisage, you know, based on the engagements, that is club activity gonna, is it gonna continue, or is there gonna be a cut off at a certain age point, or what direction do you see this going in the next few days, based on, you know, minister last night said, you know, parents can't attend matches, you know, so what?
Yeah.
What
does... Okay, if you take the grays out, take senior or adult games, like, I don't see any reason why it's just going to be difficult. And even though it was a club training last night and whole talk about, you know, your local people can't go to watch the games, that's going to be very difficult to take, but there's no good logistical reason why the games can't continue. Okay, and your clubs and county boards should see out their championship programmes. And you have to remember too, like, a lot of, you're probably at peak engagement time now. Like, you've got every probably club team is now at your sort of your knockout stages, but from basically from this week on, you're going to see club teams start to finish up, you know, their seasons, like Wexford county final, so their club's going to be done in Monaghan over the next couple of weeks. So from this week on, clubs are starting to going to wrap up their season at an adult level, so that the problem or the concerns are going to start to fall off. Underage, again, that's at the sort of same level. Those games are starting to wrap up, like, you're getting into school time. So it's not that long a window to actually try and push this thing over the line and get it finished. So I don't think there's any ambition and to try and not finish adult games and get them done. There's no good reason not to do it, even though it is going to be difficult. The children thing is more challenging. You know, right? like a lot of us were all involved with our kids and your Saturday mornings or your Friday evenings, and, you know, to try and ask parents or not allow parents in to supervise, and not necessarily supervise, but we all know parents that might have children that, you know, if they weren't there, the child wouldn't come, as simple as that, to try and allow them to come, and that support that you need. Very difficult. That would be very difficult for club to try and embark on that, and that's why the request put out a very reasonable ask that a parent or guardian could be allowed to view in attendance in a safe, open environment their child play. Like, if you're going to ask a parent to get into a car and drive the other side of the country to play a game, but then you're going to ask that parent to sit in the car for an hour and a half and then bring them home, whilst that parent could actually go to a hotel or go to all these other activities that are deemed okay, but yet they're higher risk than going to watch the child on the terrace. That's very difficult for a parent to understand and rationalise. And that's where all the frustration and kickback is coming from. And it just puts a very difficult taste in people's mouths. So that's why, so we're listening. We're not taking these decisions, you know, naturally. You're listening to what the membership, but you just need to go on social media and Facebook, the frustration that's out there. And so as an association, you had a responsibility to reflect that, make what is reasonable request to allow the games to proceed for the next couple of weeks until things will start to wrap up for the season.
Yeah, Rory, we saw, obviously, Kieran Scobrahini had a game that was called off at the weekend. The clubs that do seem to be reacting well, like the I think there's a couple of cases around the country, I won't name names, where they're possibly the processes haven't testing and alerting your clubmates and alerting the club of potential COVID cases hasn't been fantastic. But for the most part, you know, the government have admitted that there have been no clusters related to actual sports events. So Dick and his team, Roy, should be relatively happy that, you know, the GAA are managing the situation within their own organisation pretty well.
I think that's probably what's led to a lot of the frustration that Ciarán mentioned earlier. I think that's ultimately the problem here. I mean, I know there was a lot of kickback towards the GAA's statement. I didn't really have too much of a problem with it. I suppose the only issue really is that when you start naming people, and like something that we've been well trained in Sunday game territory, is the one thing you should always try and avoid is any personal, just making any comment that's of a personal nature. Like, but I think there's just an element of frustration. Like, literally while we were just speaking in just seconds ago there, I had a WhatsApp come through from the academy coordinator who in our club here in Donabate, who's still awaiting direction in terms of what to do about the academy on Saturday morning, given that it's about anywhere between 40 and 50 kids. Very, very difficult to separate them into groups of 15. Very difficult to do anything with them when they're 3 and 4 and 5 years of age, to be perfectly honest. Can you realistically turn around and say to parents of children of that age, listen, drop your kid and head off for 90 minutes, you know, when the kid might, you know, fall down, start crying, you know, there's all sorts of child protection issues in and around that as well. And I suppose that's ultimately what's happened here, is that the GAA has, I personally think, has played a bit of a blinder all the way through COVID, from the very, very beginning right up until, we'll say, the last couple of days. And I wouldn't necessarily say they've done anything wrong in the last few days either. There's confusion around the messaging, and the messaging ultimately is coming from government. I think what's happened from the GAA's perspective is the rules governing the games have almost been changed in the middle of the match, and people are like, so you told us that we were able to do this. Now you're saying we have to go back to do the other thing while continuing to do what you said we can do. And then they're looking at that put in context with all of the other guidelines around mass and outdoor gatherings and things like that. And I suppose that is leading to confusion. I think the government just need to be better on that messaging front. I just think it's from the GAA's perspective, sometimes I often wonder, do they actually realise how unwieldy and how big the Gaelic Athletic Association is? And I see some people saying, oh, they're feeling that they're a special case. Well, they are. It's an absolutely, in an Irish context, this is an amorphous mass of an organisation, very, very difficult to run. Yeah. So I think all the GAA were trying to do was just talk to us. And I wouldn't necessarily see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, especially to that point, Conor, and it's not about, I can see people who may be non-GAA related looking in and sort of saying, who do you think you are, type thing. But at this point in time, okay, so rugby at a club local level isn't really up and running because that's not their season. Soccer, I'm not sure about Dublin District Leagues, but there's very little activity because this is summer, this is GAA season. This is GAA's time of the year where it is the prime focus. You know, schools aren't back, so in terms of the kids. So, you know, at this point in time, the GAA is this arguably the single biggest organisation that is mobilising people and providing social outlets and all the rest. So, it absolutely is an exception at this point in time. Not in terms of the whole country and all the organisations, but in the here and now and the impact on people's lives it's having positively and the frustration, it absolutely is, and nobody can dispute that. So that's where the sort of the request of a wee bit more direct information, because as you said, let's just be clear on the facts. We have no evidence to suggest that there has been a case of transmission of COVID as a resultant of GAA activities. Okay, that is the stats that we have at hand, and we're looking at those on a continual basis. So cases have come in, so people have got tested positive, but that has been from outside, be it work or their own social activities, but they happen to be a club member as well, and it gets reported through the club. but there's no evidence that that has been transferred through playing games.
Is there not a fairly obvious example then in Clare, Dick, that might...
That, they did not get that from playing GAA, Mickey, and that's the distinction people...
That was a raid in Kilkee, was it?
Yes, well, it was. But like, that's... Like, that at the end of the day, what people do outside of the white lines, we try to influence, we try to ask club members to be responsible and all the rest, but, you know, the GAA can't be... ultimately responsible for what happens in broader society.
So the GAA are confident that the six Cratlow players who contracted COVID-19, there was all community transmission from Kilkee Beach. It was not Cratlow GAA club.
All we can say, Mickey, is we have no evidence to suggest otherwise. Now, that's probably an exceptional case.
Mm.
But, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, well, I'll put it like this. If there was potential there for transfer as part of playing games, we would have seen it elsewhere. It wouldn't have just been in Kilkee. You'd have seen it in other clubs because of the amount of sessions, the amount of volumes. So in the absence of anything else to support that case might have been contributed to GAA games, you'd have to say it's reasonable to assume it was all linked to their social activities.
I think within that, lads, though, there's still a contradiction in that, you know, games are still able to go ahead and up to 40 people, you can have two teams and mentors and stuff like that. So, you know, the frustration that's out there over the last couple of days is really around supporters and parents not being able to attend matches. So even if there was a transmission problem on the field that was identified, and in that case, you'd be looking at the match situation. But we're still saying it's okay to have matches. So the issues appear to be arising external, outside the white lines, if you want to call it that. And there was still probably a lack of clarity where I think Ronald Lynn referenced 75 clusters within the family situation, and some of them were social, some of them were carpooling, and some of them may be sporting related. But there's no definitive evidence there to suggest that it's coming from the GAA pitch. And I think that's where the lack of clarity is, and that's where the frustration is, and probably the GAA we're right to ask that question, to say, listen, we want some backup here. If we have a problem, tell us about it and we'll deal with it.
I don't want to get bogged down in the statement because it's obviously a very small part of a very large issue. But Dickie said the GAA is an exception. I just wonder, does that ring true with kind of the we're all in it together kind of motto? There's other clubs, there's cycling, athletics, rowing, triathlon clubs around the country
who are quite likely
going to go to the wall, you know?
Pure volume, Mickey, in terms of pure volume of participants, it is, and the fact that you are attempting to bring them together in close contact in terms of games and supporters, you know, there is not an equivalence at the minute. You know, everyone is doing their best within their own. So, you know, I'm quite happy with that. If everyone wants to put their case together and show the same sort of volume of what you're trying to attempt to do. And I think to try and continue it forward, because like at the end of the day, I think everybody would agree that difficult and all that it is, we want to see the games to continue. We want the club championship to complete. We want an inter-county championship. So to allow us to try and even get our heads around that, there needs to be some sort of support and confidence from government point of view that we can do this, because there's a massive if there is question marks over that support or decisions, like, you know, that leaves decision makers in a very difficult position. And I think that's where it's reasonable, as I say, it's a reasonable request to get some insight because of the massive impact it could have otherwise.
Yeah. Finally on that, we had Kieran Shannon's column yesterday kind of questioned whether any NPHET member had ever, you know, been at a club training. And then today we've John Fogarty in the same paper in the Examiner detailing in some detail, obviously, Ronan Glynn's kind of underage career as a wing back with Clare Galway. Do you think it was right to name Ronan Glynn in that statement to kind of personalise it to that extent, Dick?
Depends when he came out first. I sort of like some of the other guys have said, I didn't see anything in it. Like at the end of the day, you know, Ronan is doing an excellent job in many ways, has been the front of NPHET. He is the person that the country listened to, and at the end of the day, the government are essentially clearly stating that they are following their advice. So you know, there's an element of accountability for this, and Ronan is that person, you know, and that is the level of responsibility that he's taken, and it's a very difficult job, but he's doing it very well as his predecessor. So, you know, I think there has to be, you know, an element of just, and it's not, I don't think it's personalization. I think at the end of the day, there's nobody else. We don't see anybody else from Netflix leading the charge or leading the front. So like that is, if you say Netflix, you're referencing Ronan Glynn. So I think people can boil too much down to it. And from a personal point of view, I think he is that person, and he looks to be an extremely accomplished, and his statement last night, I took on it. You know, he put himself forward to give that clarity to the country, almost like a politician. We could get better clarity from our political people, could be doing a lot better. So I think he seems to be a very accomplished, reasonable person, and I think all the GAA is looking for is sort of a reasonable discussion in terms of the decisions or information that they have that's influenced their decision as having such a major impact on the GAA.
Okay, Ciarán, if you were a betting man, would you be putting money on an inter-county championship taking place this year?
I suppose the word there is hope. It'd probably be a bit of an
outsider. You shouldn't bet in hope, I'm told.
Yeah, it would be an outsider. Let's put it that way.
Hope isn't a strategy.
Yeah, because you listen. I suppose we have to face up to facts in terms of the growing numbers on a daily basis. And one thing that's stuck out in the last couple of days is that the measures that were taken, I'm not too sure whether it's going to really stop or suppress the numbers in any great effective way. So we have to see how the next couple of weeks unfold. But I suppose back in March, we hoped that we'd have an inter-county championship. And I still hope we do. I think the players will have a significant role to play in that as well, depending on whether it's a safe environment for them to play in. I think, you know, we're probably not where we had hoped we would be a few months ago in terms of building up to the championship and the plans that were there. And maybe, you know, the GAA has to revisit that. And I think really it's hugely important for probably society that we might have an inter-county championship, because Dick touched on it already, that the club season is going to come to a close. There's going to be very little club activity probably for the winter months. Indoor activities where kids play other sport may not go ahead either. We're going to have long nights. It's going to be a bleak winter. And in terms of society, having an inter-county championship that can be run off in maybe a short period of time with plenty of live games or live streams, I think it will be a huge boost to the nation as a whole in terms of mental health, in terms of interest, in terms of the older people that may have to stay indoors. So for those reasons alone, I would hope that we could put a structure in place to facilitate, you know, a championship. But I do really feel strongly that the players will have, I think the GAA should be starting an engagement. I think the GPA have a role to play in this, to sit down and say, right, lads, this is how we're planning it out. This is how it looks like. Here are the challenges. It may be a case of having four provincial venues, dedicated kind of COVID venues where all the matches are played, where the environment can be controlled in a safe way. All teams wouldn't have to travel, it'd be within their own provinces. Maybe we have to invest in testing. And I think the biggest challenge probably for the GAA is cost. They're down on gate receipts. It's going to take money to prepare teams. They will be looking for a slice of the government funding, but you know that's probably a sign for other areas of maintenance and costs, ongoing costs. So I think it's a financial challenge for the GAA. I would like to think government would support it to bring something to our society for the winter months, and I hope we can find a way. I really do. I hope we can find a way, because I think it's hugely important.
Yeah. Rory, we were talking here a couple of weeks ago about the national health barriers and the financial barriers for an inter-county season. Yeah. I'd say those barriers have both got bigger since we were last talking about this a couple of weeks ago.
100%. And I would absolutely endorse everything that Wheelo said there. I mean, I think it would be essential that an inter-county championship. I don't know if you saw Marty's report on the 6-1 news last night. It was very good. He had John Kiely on board, and John Kiely made the very same point that it's like even games behind closed doors might have been something that you might have found unpalatable back in March when this first crashed into us. But I think the realization now is that this is here maybe for a lot longer than what we originally envisaged. And to actually get some class of an intercounty championship to give people some form of distraction or something to look forward to or some class of hope all the way through what is, as Wheeler said, going to be a very, very bleak winter. Like, we got a little bit of a vortex into what the winter is going to be like over the last 24 hours. And yeah, it's grim. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, you know, okay, the sun is coming out a small bit today, but like to think that that's what... Yeah, but to think that that's what you're facing for the next, you know, 4 or 5 months with no GA, no sport. Okay, there might be sport, there might be, look, but I think what Wheeler said again, I think maybe, you know, 4 provincial venues, I think the dome was something that maybe was suggested, you know, like, given the games are going to be indoors, that could be the new dome that they've built in Connacht, could be one venue.
Taking the idea of a bubble very literally there, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, but like, it could be a really interesting way to present the games, given the fact that they are probably going to be behind closed doors. Parky Quay was obviously tailor-made with the LEDs and everything else. Might have to do some work maybe in Breffni or one of the Ulster grounds, and Croke Park is already set up, as we know. But I would absolutely also look at almost like what they did with Project Restart in the UK, where the British government went in and subsidised heavily, and every game was shown. Every single match was shown on TV on one form or the other. And I don't know whether that might be logistically possible. From our point of view, it would certainly be a challenge. Is there an opportunity for the broadcasters to come on board? Do you need to open up the Thursdays and the Fridays? Like, really have a good conversation around the Thursdays and the Fridays now. I mean, for instance, I'd ask all three of you, right? Let's say Wexford were playing in the first round of a knockout Leinster Championship match on a Thursday night against, who were they due to play in the first round? Is it Wicklow?
Yeah.
It's Wicklow. So you've Paul Galvin's Wexford taking on Wicklow, who are also under new management, if I'm not mistaken. And that game could be played in Croke Park on a Thursday night. I would watch that. Absolutely would watch that, a knockout game. And I think we probably, whatever, like, the big thing for me is we're still married to a certain way of doing things, which was pre-COVID. We need to move our headspace away from that, because the rules have changed. The diameter, the pitch, the dimensions to the pitch have changed, and we need to kind of move with that mindset.
Yeah, Dick is still very much mid-COVID with the advisory committee, Dick. Just the mention there of, like, maybe dedicated stadiums and stuff like that. Is that something that your committee are discussing, and are you looking at ways and means of getting a championship run by hell or high water?
Well, personally, and I wrote about this last week, I'm very clear on this. You find a way, the games have to happen. You know what I mean? Like, whatever, lay up all the challenges and knock them out one by one. If it's financial, right, what do we need to do? Where do we need to cut costs? Where can we get money in to bridge that gap? Find a way, start those conversations now from a health and safety or a public health point of view. If you think, you know, at the end of the day, most county grounds now are at a level that there's not a whole pile between them. Really, you'd like to think that every county has got a facility that you could bring up to a fairly high standard. Just even around Ulster, I'm looking at Cavan, Newry, Armagh, Clonus, all good grounds. All of, and then you have to remember, it's more than likely going to be behind closed doors at this stage. So what really you're trying to manage is it's the players, it's the backroom team. It's a relatively small number of people you have to try and manage. It's not that difficult to do, really. And you do have extra resources of people and a focus to put on that. So I personally don't see any major obstacle to having the games from a GA point of view. Now, if the government and NPHET dictate otherwise, well, then that's a different conversation. And as we have been to date, we have no control over that. But if it's still okay to play games and have the support people around games, basically the equivalent of what we've seen in across the water in the Premiership, can we do the same for intercounty championships? I would say yes. And I think there is a driving ambition to make that happen at a top level because of all of what you just said, that national need for them to happen and have something positive to take our distraction away from everything else, which is going to be an extremely difficult winter.
Yeah, Kieran, if it is to happen, there are obviously going to be obstacles and there are going to be problems. Last year, the GAA made €36 million in gate receipts. That's not coming in. If they don't have a championship, then they lose out on something under €20 million in broadcast rights. The bosses don't share those figures with us, so we're just going on what other people report, but we think it's about €18 million. So in a way, if they play no games, they're, you know, the guts of €60 million in the hole. If they play games with nobody behind closed doors, it's €36 million or thereabouts. But Shane Dowling was on Game On the other night.
It'll not be a management account, Mickey. You know, there's other costs.
No, that's why I'm a journalist, Dick, because numbers are my thing. Broad strokes.
It costs a lot to put the games on that you don't have as well.
I'm just going with the really big numbers.
I know.
Shane Dowling said on Game On that he reckoned players would happily forego expenses or, you know, other things that they might expect in a normal year.
Yeah. I would like to think so.
But I think on that, Mikey, I would have thought, there's no doubt finance is the biggest barrier, but it's a case of whether we want to make it happen. And I think government support is going to be crucial in that, because I think it's crucial for the nation that the government do come up and support it. And I know people say, well, there's that elitism of the GAA and stuff like that. But listen, a large organisation wanting to put on something, the broader, I suppose, purposes of it and what it's trying to achieve is important for society. But the other factor is that, you know, it does cost, like one of the biggest expenses that the GA has is team preparation costs. Now, they have to be significantly reduced. And if you're running it over a shorter time frame and you're running it in set venues and you don't have as much travel, there definitely won't be as much team expenses this year. There won't be overnights in hotels. There has to be a lot of savings in that element of it. So realistically, you know, I think we all agree, and it will probably be a large consensus, that we'd like the games to happen. Second thing,
the other thing as well there, Wheelaw, sorry to cut across you. One other thing that will significantly reduce costs is, and we shouldn't forget, is it's in football, it's straight knockout. There's no Super 8s. Yeah. You know, it's a much more condensed championship. So that would ultimately reduce costs also, wouldn't it? I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's less games, obviously. But I do think, firstly, decide, do we want it to happen? Yes. Do the players want it to happen? Yes. Tick those boxes first. How are we going to make it happen? And then, obviously, you're looking at the financial. And if it means, I suppose, borrowing money over on the long term to make it happen for the significance of the importance around it, then that may have to be done. So I think over the next couple of weeks, the GA as a family, including the players, including the administrators, have to come to a consensus as to what do we want? Do we want this to happen? Obviously, health guidelines will have an impact and could control or could scupper things depending on the numbers. We could end up in full lockdown. You know, ministers touched on that a few times on prime time the other night. So, you know, everything can be scuppered very quickly. But I definitely think, I would hope that we could get a definitive plan to say, let's make this happen and let's put a plan in place to see if it's going to be achieved.
Okay, before we move away from this, Dick, have you any idea when you may get clarity from the government on particularly the issue of underage matches and parents attending? Did you have any from your meeting last night? Did you get any indication?
Yeah, it's there at the minute. So it's what has been put to the government and the relevant bodies has made public. It's out there. It's gone to the club. So we're waiting some clarification on that. And the sooner something comes through, the better, because as I say, there's cool camps, there's juvenile matches, there's training, there's concerned parents, there's a huge amount of people.
Particularly ahead of the weekend, I suppose.
Waiting on this. So I think, you know, decision, you'd imagine in the next 24 hours, you'd hope there'd be something forthcoming.
Yeah, just before we finish up, lads, Damien Lawler reported last night, and it's in most of the papers today, that the fixture calendar review task force met last night. And, you know, they seem to be lukewarm or warmer on the implementation of a split season from 2022 onwards, Congress allowing. Just, you know, it looks like a February to July for intercounty and then the rest of the year, July onwards for club. It seems to be broadly welcomed at the moment. Kieran, what would be your opinion?
I would certainly welcome it. Something that I would have been supporting going back a couple of years. Like Mikey, when the fixtures committee produced a report last year and you know, one of their recommendations was to intermingle the inter-county season and the club season and have 2 weeks here for the club and 2 weeks for the county. I just looked at that and I said, ain't going to work, because of the power of inter-county managers and how they would control it. And the club season would have ended up an absolute farce. And I didn't think it was going to be work. And maybe one of the benefits of the COVID crisis over the last couple of months is that inter-county players have got to see what it's like to have maybe a set season and not be in that bubble 12 months of the year. Club players have probably been encouraged to come back for a defined season and come back and know that they're not training in January and finishing their season with a playoff game in December. So I think there's been positives arose in the last couple of months, and I think the GPA proposal makes perfect sense, and I definitely think it's something that we push forward. I would be fully behind it, because I think we do need two defined seasons and shorten the burden on the inter-county player, but also enhance, you know, the profile of the club and give them a set defined season where they have all their players, or management have all their players. Players know that they're going to be training for a set period. And secondary competitions can continue if needed in preparation for club season later in the year. So it gives clubs a good preparation to build through to the club championships come July, August. It makes sense. I think when we move from September back to the August, you know, there was a lot of complaints about that. We got over that. We adapted to that fairly quickly. The April month for clubs hasn't worked. Not every county buys into it. It doesn't work. It's kind of a month that's lost. So I think it makes perfect sense, and I hope we get a lot of positivity behind it and move forward, hopefully, with it as quick as we can.
Yeah, from a club point of view, Rory, you'd expect there would be league matches played before July. There would be club activity before July, because it would be, as much as club players do kind of grouse about an 11-month indifferent season, they mightn't be massively keen on a season that only begins in July and ends in October either. They might want a bit more game than that.
Oh, no, absolutely 100%. I mean, if you look at that window that they're looking to give over for clubs, my understanding is that window would be for championship only. Now, you can run league games during that window too, but the key difference is that window, the clubs will have exclusive access to their players, and that's it. There's no sort of grey area around that. Like in a huge number of dual counties, like I'm living in one now, I used to live in one. It's simply unfeasible and unworkable to think that you can run off your club season in that 2 to 3 or 4 month window. Like Dublin run every second weekend. So it's hurling football. And in a county where you have 16 team leagues, so you have to play 15 league games. And given how important the league is in Dublin, which is something that took me a while to get used to, but to be honest, they're on the money by making league football almost a preeminent competition in a lot of ways. Like, that will have to begin in February and run as it always has done. I think the big difference is that you will create a sort of a World Cup style club championship in the month of August and September, which I think will be quite exciting as well for the clubs, and good profile as well for the club game.
Dick, are you in favour of it? And more importantly, with your experience of GAA administration, do you think Congress would go for this?
Yeah, well, thankfully I'm not on that committee. I know, but like as a player, like a recent county player, a current club player, involved in management, obviously you have a lot of skin in the game on getting this right still, and hope to stay involved for a few years ahead. So, this isn't necessarily a difficult thing to fix. What as Kieran touched on, you know, COVID has pushed an awful lot of things forward, put an awful lot of things into a sort of a test environment that otherwise could have taken 3, 4, 5 years to get through. You know, like, just take our own example here in Monaghan. So we've come up with a new structure for the championship, like nearly every other county has done, and it's working really well. So like, you've got your senior intermediate groups, we've nicely set up here, you've got 10 and 10. So like, your 10 senior clubs, 2 groups of 5, they play off a round robin, and then based on that, you finish with a quarterfinal knockout and relegation playoff. Nice and clean, runs over a nice 2, 2.5 month period. I could easily see that being your end of year, you know, competition and way to finish up. And prior to that, it's just normal league football. And actually, if you go across the border here in Armagh, they arguably have the template for what the new GAA landscape could look like already in place. So they play league football, it's defined, it's fixed, and they just run it from whenever it is, say March or April, every weekend. County players are available to play. That's grand. You know, you can't exclude them, but it's not predicated on them being available. And at the end of that, I think it's 12 or 16 game period, then you break into that championship, but you're seeded on your league finish. So your league does still matter, but it's not the be all and end all. So if you have to play without your county players, so be it, but you're still then in the championship at the tail end. So this is not a difficult thing to fix. There has to be a few boats burned in terms of timelines and the sacred cows around championship. But I think, as Kieran touched on as well, we've done that already. The world didn't end when we didn't play the All-Ireland Championships in September last year. It certainly won't happen if we bring it in another few weeks to have them finish in at the end of July. So I think there's a groundswell of consensus because of how well new structures have worked in terms of actual logistics of it, but also that people see the benefits of having a county players, having the full club unit playing together, and let's say, like, we need to lock that down, we need to make that part and parcel, let's just make it happen. So I'd be very confident something will happen there over the coming 12 months or so.
Yeah, and the Chinese have the same word for crisis as opportunity. There you go, we're learning. We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much to Dick, Kieran, and to Rory. RTE website and the News Now app for all your GA news, and we have plenty of reports. We have the Wexford County Final, Hurling Final this weekend, Shamlers and Navena, so that's starting. And we have two Clare Hurling quarterfinals on TV on Saturday night, Rory.
Two Clare Hurling quarterfinals, yeah. First up, 6 Mile Bridge, coached by Davey Fitz, and their defending champions who have just come back from the intermediate champions in Clare. And then the big one at 6:30 is Ballier, which is Tony Kelly's crowd, against Kilmaley. And they'd be kind of seen as two of the front runners in the Clare hurling scene. And their quarterfinals. And then we're back in again with John Conlon as well on the panel, which form current Clare hurler. And then on Sunday, we've got we're heading a little bit further down the country, down to Killarney, under their championship this weekend. Kerry only beginning the first round this weekend because they run off a club championship separately. So it should be, so it'd be a busy enough weekend. And we're kind of, as Dick mentioned earlier, we're kind of into knockout mode now, which kind of should add a level of excitement to proceedings.
Yeah. All right. And of course, Saturday and Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1 will have plenty of roundups and reports and reactions from those matches. So again, thank you, Rory, to Dick and to Kieran. And it was an interesting conversation. And hopefully we'll have another interesting conversation next week. So join us again then. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it! He hits it! It's over the bar!